Hello, everyone. I am James Dean Mixes from the Mixing Music Podcast, member exclusive episodes, where every week DK and I break down the technical side of mixing, mastering, and music production. With the normal weekly episodes, you get to hear DK and Lou talk about the more philosophical side of the music industry. On the member exclusive episodes, DK and I get more into the nitty-gritty technical side of things. We sometimes do mix breakdowns, we break down technical tips, and sometimes we share things that couldn't be shared on the normal public episodes. And we release two of these episodes every week. So for $3.99 a month, you get quite the bang for your buck. So go check out the mixingmusicpodcast.com or click on the link in the description to subscribe now. So without further ado, here's an episode from the vault. Friends, and welcome back to yet another exclusive subscriber-only episode of the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host for today and until the end of 2023, Braden from Flint Mastering, and joining me are two damn good mix engineers, Daddy DK and James Dean.
That was the first
part of this
time.
Show. Yeah, like usually you just call us a bitch at the beginning, but you're actually like nice.
Yeah, you caught us off guard. That was like really kind, actually.
Yeah, psych, also, you guys fucking suck. All right, let's get it. Just kidding.
Also, really I don't know if you've been more. I don't know. I think you need to be more explicit that I am the best. So, I think that's important to state. I'm not just good. I'm the best.
Are you saying out of us two, or just overall?
In my mind.
In your mind.
That joke, it just totally flopped. It wasn't even a joke.
Nice. We used the awkward silence to shut him down.
If it was funny, like I probably would have laughed or something, but yeah.
I'm glad you didn't laugh because it would have been bad if you laughed at me thinking that I was the best. Like, haha, you fucking suck.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good sign that you didn't laugh.
Yeah, I only let out breath air. That's what I'm going to tell. Like, I was like, that didn't answer my question when you said it in my mind.
Yeah,
more of
sure.
A laugh
okay,
of like, what? This dumbass.
Well, we got a good episode today with Tony Maserati. Braden, do you want to talk about it or how are we going to jump into this?
Yeah, so speaking of someone who is actually the best at mixing, Tony Maserati is going to be giving us a clip today. He is going to talk about how you can get movement and dynamic contrast in a mix, but still be competitive with the levels. So here we go. Without further ado, the best mixer, Tony Maserati, roll the tape.
How do you have so much great movement going on in your mixes, but still compete with the levels? That's probably a reference to the Jason Mraz stuff, where it's got a lot of dynamic range, but you're still somehow making that compete.
If you manage your gain structure and create enough headroom, there's a clarity that happens in your mixes. So you get that depth and that width and that height because you've got the headroom, and you'll hear that stuff more clearly. That's how it's done. And that management of that headroom is really key to that kind of thing. So that's the best way I can answer that. Obviously, the producers and the artists are playing that stuff and I'm just enhancing it, but controlling that gain structure is what's really helping it.
All righty, James and DK, now that we have heard from the best, Tony Maserati, let's get our collective thoughts on it. He talks about managing gain structure and creating enough headroom. He says that managing headroom is the key to getting movement in addition to high levels. So, James, give us your thoughts as to why you chose this clip of the best mix engineer, Tony Maserati. And then, DK, you can tell us why you think about this as well.
Yeah, I think headroom is a very interesting subject just because there are different ways to like think about it or approach it. I remember I used to, almost in a way, obsess so much about headroom that, or like gain staging, that like it A, made my mixing process just a lot longer, and B, it almost in a way could ruin the mix. I used to go into every session I got and I would listen through and I would make sure that every single track only peaks at like -12 or something like that. or like stayed within a certain range. And I realize now more that that's not as important as just watching everything overall. I'd say that headroom is a very good thing to keep track of. And a way that I keep that is I just turn down all my faders, like usually negative 6 dB. And that gives me a little more headroom to work with. I was talking to Bob Horn, and he, because we were talking about, he exported a mix and it was in 32-bit float. And I asked why he did that. And he said that he mixes in 32-bit when he can, because that also buys him a lot of headroom to be able to work with. So yeah, it's just like an interesting subject that there's a bunch of different approaches, but overall it is good to keep an eye on your headroom and to make sure you always give yourself space so that you can make things dynamic and make things pop.
So I actually have a question before you start talking, DK. When Tony Maserati says gain structure, is that something different from gain staging, or is it just a different way to say it?
Yeah, it's just a different way to say it. He specifically actually said gain management as well.
Mm.
obviously this clip is about headroom equaling clarity. That's interesting. I'm trying to figure out in practical terms why headroom would equal clarity. And here's the thoughts that are coming to me right now. When in the analog domain, the higher volume, the more gain that you have recording into something, because of the nature of analog circuits, it is not a one-to-one ratio. Like what you record is not what you get out. Like there's going to be a little bit of natural compression or suppression of the transients due to the inability or the lack of full res incapability of, like, there's like headroom is important. Like the hotter it is, the more it's going to distort and the less of that original transient is going to pass through. That's why like being clean is super important in an analog domain, because you retain a lot of that initial punch through transients. I think that dimension and clarity comes from the contrast of high transient peaks and low valleys. So it's like when a kick drum is really loud in a mix and you can really feel it punch, is when it feels punchy. Like the kick drum is EQ'd very well and separated from an EQ perspective from the bass very well, but it's still very quiet. It doesn't punch because it's about that transient, that initial attack, that sensation. In the digital domain, it is full res. So the transient that you get, it does not... you get the full fidelity transient that you recorded obviously you lose a little bit of that natural transient from microphone components and if you use external preamps, compressors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you get the DAW itself, like instead of going to tape, the DAW itself will capture whatever puts into it at full res unless it goes past zero. The only reason why it matters in a mixing perspective headroom in that sense is because a lot of these analog emulated plugins will still have like a saturation circuit where it's emulating the analog gear. So like the transients will be compressed a little bit more, you know, squared out a little bit more, rounded out a little bit more, or like distort after a certain level to emulate analog components. Like a Neve console, like it's very difficult to, like, you can't go to zero. You know, where like 0 dBs in the digital realm is like anything below that, it's full res, full fidelity. There's no natural saturation, natural distortion, natural like clipping happens at zero. So I think that clarity equals headroom equals clarity, because the more headroom that you have, the more that you allow transients to be punchy and to fully produce the intended signal that you hear. And that difference between the transient attack and the sustain and the valleys is what feels like clarity.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Did I articulate that correctly? I know that was a little bit long-winded.
No, that makes sense.
I'm thinking out loud.
Have you ever tried mixing in like 32-bit for like the sake of headroom?
But yeah, I will say though that I was oversimplifying, and that there are ways in the digital domain to create even more headroom, like a higher sample rate and stuff. I have recorded, mixed in printed in 32-bit float. It's not as big of a deal as you think. I think that more importantly, you should have like true peak on. Like we're talking like margins. Mm-hmm. Like if we're talking like diminishing returns, like that is a fucking diminished return. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you could do it, but it's like if it's heavy on your computer, it's don't even worry about it. Like I would prioritize having a faster working workflow for your computer than a computer that's always crashing because you refuse to do anything other than 92 kilohertz. And actually 32-bit, I will say bit depth is a little bit more important in the digital domain. This is slightly going into territories that I'm less familiar with, but as far as I understand, and from what I've heard, and Braden, I'm pretty sure you've heard this from Ian Shepherd. In order to make a converter, these manufacturers have to, it costs tens of thousands of dollars to create a converter that can do multiple sample rates and do the same high quality conversion at every single sample rate. Like that costs tens of thousands of dollars of manufacture. So if you have a converter in any modern day and age does multiple sample rates, that converter is optimized at one specific sample rate. So actually, most of the time, if you use a converter and print things or bounce things or use the conversion in any single way, at a higher kilohertz, at a higher sample rate, it's actually worse for the audio. You're creating more distortion. So for example, I've done many, many tests. Apollo works best at 48 kilohertz. Hmm. My Motu works best 48 and 92. And most of these things work best between 41 and 48. And if anything above 48, like 96 or 192 or whatever it is, actually hurts the audio and adds distortion.
Hmm. Interesting.
So that's just something, I know that has nothing to do with bit depth in answering your question, but that's just something, there's a lot more science that goes into digital audio specifically. Part of the reason why I don't talk about it is one, I'm not an acoustician, I'm not a physicist, I'm not like a computer science tech geeky guy. I understand it enough to make good audio. The tips that we give here on this show are more meant for practicality. And I think practically speaking, thinking about 32-bit or the bit depth or the sample rate hurts a creative workflow and a creative state more than induces it in most cases. Hmm. Like that should not be, you should not waste any brain cells thinking about that if that takes away at all from your creative process.
Yeah.
So if your computer gets slower because you run 32-bit, that's definitely not worth it.
Okay. Is 32-bit one that you would recommend just like, if it doesn't slow down your computer much, just do it? Or
I mean, labels at minimum require, because you're also like future-proofing. Honestly, mostly it's for future-proofing, like in case. Because like at first it was like higher bit depth and higher sample rate, but then MP3 came along and they're like, oh, because for a while the hi-fi industry, they're like, people were like, yeah, higher fidelity. Yeah, it's awesome. It's better. And then all of a sudden MP3 was invented and they're like, holy shit, why is this so fucking popular? And people realized that pop culture valued more of the space that the song takes more than the quality of the song itself. I mean, so when you do higher sample rates, it's more like future-proofing for like decades into the future if we end up catching up as far as capacity. So like right now, there's like technology to more affordably increase higher levels of data capacity. And that would directly affect future-proofing of like higher digital ranges, right? But like if you could choose 10 WAV or FLAC high-res audio files on an MP3 player versus 1,000 MP3s, there's no one in their right mind that is a general consumer that would pick the 10 songs over the 1,000 songs, right? So that was just the issue. So like in a label standpoint, like Capitol, I know for a fact, Universal and Capitol, they almost, like they don't require it, require is a heavy word, but like in all of their forms on how they want their stuff labeled and how they want their stuff submitted always says, we try our best to do a minimum of 48, 24. And some of it will even say, we recommend if you can to do 96.
Hmm.
But like they only use the 2448. And you can't even, if you're trying to upload as an independent artist, you can't even upload to DistroKid unless it's 4116. So you have to downsample it in some way.
Cool.
Yeah, and if you have, I think if you have any questions about like bit depth or the science behind any of that, you can, I don't want to blow up his inbox, but you can message Gerhard Westphalen.
Yeah.
He knows all that stuff.
Again, the thesis of this topic was headroom equals clarity. And I think headroom equals clarity because with proper headroom, you have better translating transients, and proper fully translated transients creates a sensation of clarity between the instruments in between.
Yeah.
True, true.
So even if you're in the digital domain and overcompress everything and oversaturate everything, you're not technically, may not lose headroom in the overall mixing, but you're destroying the headroom and crushing it. So like it feels, it's less refreshing. It's more full and muddied, you know, like muddied in a different sense, not in like the 300 to 500 hertz, but like muddy as in like, it's just a wall of sound.
Cool beans.
Okay, well, I think that's my thoughts.
Oh, yeah.
We all gave each other the awkward pause.
Yes.
I didn't feel awkward. So, I'm never awkward.
I think that's a good spot to go ahead and wrap up. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for subscribing. We love you. We appreciate you. And we could not do this without you. I know I say it every week, and I've said it every week for almost 2 years now, but we really do mean it. It's awesome to have listeners and to have support and to see the listener number go up. So thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Join the Mixing Music Discord if you haven't already. Links.dkmixes.com for all of DK's cool, free, and helpful stuff. dkmixes.com/videos for DK's Twitch and YouTube goodies. And you can also visit mixingmusicpodcast.com/sponsors to see our list of sponsors, some cool deals you can get, and also ways you can help the show. I think that's it, gentlemen. Thanks, James, for picking some killer clips for the past few episodes and also for today's episode. And thank you for sharing your thought process behind it. And also, DK, obviously, you're here all the time. Thank you for sharing your thoughts and for helping people continue to grow and get better at the art of mixing.
And thank you, Brayden. Thank you for your jokes that are fun to not laugh at sometimes.
Yeah. Punk.
Yeah, bitch.
All right. Happy mixing.
Look at this guy with his headphones. What's wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah, James says as he's recording with AirPods in, like a freaking California dweeb.
Yeah, he doesn't, he doesn't look like he uses Microsoft Excel for fun.
Yeah, James.
What's
looks
not
like
fun
he's...
about it? It's a good time.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. If you can't get enough of the Mixing Music Podcast and want 3 times the amount of episodes every week, subscribe to our exclusive content for only $4 a month or $40 a year at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. Happy mixing, my friends, and enjoy the show.